From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, government reform groups call for ethics reform and the public agrees. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the chances of serious ethics reform in the coming session, and New York ranks 49th in tissue and organ donations. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Now that the two leaders of the legislature have been convicted on multiple counts of corruption, government reform groups in New York are looking to the remaining politicians at the Capitol for reform. And polls show that the public is with them. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Cuomo has offered only brief remarks since the former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver and former Senate Leader Dean Skelos were convicted on multiple counts of corruption, including extortion and bribery, for essentially selling their public positions in exchange for millions of dollars. But the governor promises to have a lot more to say in his State of the State message in January.
I think the legislature needs serious and dramatic reform. We have had, in the recent weeks, convictions of senior legislative officials, which I believe are indefensible.
Cuomo says his ideas will address a loophole in campaign finance laws, which was highlighted in both corruption trials. Donors who gave money to both of the leaders skirted donation limits by masking the money through using limited liability corporations, or LLCs.
Part of it, I think, is going to be campaign finance, like the LLC loophole. Part of it, I think, is going to be more disclosure.
He did not give details, though, saying he's waiting until next month to unveil the entire plan. Cuomo has also received money from LLCs. Susan Lerner with Common Cause says actually the governor does not have to wait for the legislature to agree to make changes. She says the State Board of Elections has the power to close the loophole administratively.
Ideally, it should be a legislative solution, but the Board of Elections could do it tomorrow.
The Board of Elections, with two Democratic and two Republican commissioners, has been gridlocked over the matter. The U.S. attorney who successfully brought the prosecutions against the former legislative leaders, Preet Bharara, spoke for the first time in a broadcast interview on The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Bharara says he doesn't want to prescribe specific changes that could help keep lawmakers out of trouble in the future, but he says the structure of New York's part-time legislature, which is permitted to earn outside income, was at the root of both the Silver and Skelos cases. Bharara says discussion of switching to a full-time legislature should at least be on the table.
There is something to be said for the fact, based on our experience in bringing these cases, it's a little bit harder to get away with bribery. It's a little bit harder to get away with extortion if there are more strict limits on outside income. And common sense will tell you it is much harder to disguise a bribe or a kickback as a referral if you don't have the ability to have the same kind of outside income. But again, I understand that there are arguments on the other side as well, but I think it's really something that seriously should be considered.
Governor Cuomo agrees that the issue of outside income for lawmakers is becoming problematic.
And that clash just continues to bring conflict after conflict after conflict. And that is the root of a lot of this.
But Cuomo said earlier in December that the legislature seems to have no appetite to change the current rules, which would require an amendment to the state's constitution. Whatever comes next for reform in 2016, there's a larger question looming. What will the U.S. attorney do next? Barrera would not say whether he's continuing investigations that relate to the governor or his administration.
I'm not going to talk about any investigations that we have open. We have lots of investigations open.
But the U.S. attorney cautions, don't read too much into that. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, this week, again, the issue of ethics reform. Many reform groups calling for the governor and the legislature to now enact significant and substantive ethics reform in the coming session as a result of the many convictions, but the two most notable, of course, Dean Skelos, the Republican former Senate Majority Leader, and Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, the former speaker, of course, both convicted. And what Preet Bharara will do next?
Well, he has told everybody to stay tuned. We don't really know what that means. But, of course, lips have been wagging for quite a while about whether he intends to look into the way in which, for example, the governor and others have raised money for their campaigns and whether there's a quid pro quo there. Up until now, it's been you did something for your son or you did something for yourself, Shelley Silver. But now we're taking a look at the ugliness that goes on in raising vast amounts of money. Look, nobody gives you a ton of money, $50,000, $60,000, and says, I don't want anything back for it. No, they won. They're going to give you the money, and they're going to consider it an investment all too often, maybe not always, but for the most part. And they're going to say, if I give you $50,000 and I get $5 million back for it or $50 million back for it, that's a good investment. So we know that there are ways now that people have been skirting the spirit of the laws. One of them are these limited liability corporation PACs, in which they are allowed to give virtually anything they want, making a mockery out of all the laws. Governor Cuomo, for his part, has accepted money, as have so many others, this way, and says it's terrible, and he's going to try to put a stop to it later. In the meantime, he's taking the money, and that exists virtually across the board. You know, David, you ask, how could it be that these guys all get convicted and then there isn't a shroud, there isn't a possibility of real reform? If I'm them, I'm saying, hey, we better do something. We better do it right now. To me, I'm for major constitutional fixes. One of them is, you know, initiative and referendum in which the voters can override the legislature, pass a law, an ethics law, you know, of their own. And the other, of course, is term limits, which is very debatable. My fellow political scientists often hate it. I'm all for it because I think things have gotten so out of hand. And the people in New York City voted overwhelmingly for it at least two or three times. And it has worked out extraordinarily well in New York. So I think both of those ideas are good. Here's a bad idea. The legislature is saying, you know, if you make us really full time and you give us a huge salary, well, then maybe we won't steal. There's a pause in my voice here because everybody knows it's ridiculous. You don't reward bad behavior. And that's what they're asking us to do.
Oversight. There is the Senate Ethics Committee, and there was a chairman, Tony Avella, and not much got done.
David, you're right in raising this guy Avella. He's one of the latest in what we call the traitors, or the people who left the Democratic Party to make common cause with the Republicans in the state Senate. There are lots of reasons this happened. None of them look that attractive to me. But these five guys are over there. Avella is one of them. So in order to attract him, in order to reward him for coming over, they make him chairman of the Ethics Committee. Sounds good, he says, except for one thing. The Ethics Committee doesn't meet. It's not allowed to meet. It's not allowed to hold hearings. So what you have is something called an Ethics Committee, which is never used. It's chutzpah of the first order. Now, Avella, under tremendous pressure now, says, well, he said, I'm going to start doing some hearings and stuff. They absolutely remove him. They say, you can't be here anymore. We'll make somebody else. We'll give you some other post, but somebody who will know how to play the rules and not meet. Terrible.
There was a conversation you had with the state editor from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, about what's next in the sights of the U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara. Indeterminate at this point.
Well, he's got a staff of terrific prosecutors. There are those people who are saying, well, we'll be rid of him soon because his term ends with that of the president. I'm assuming if Hillary Clinton gets elected president of the United States and Charles Schumer is either the second or third most powerful guy in the Senate, well, when Chuck had basically pre-appointed, that's the way it works, you know. Well, it's a presidential appointment. It's always the senator of the same, the senior senator of the same party that makes the decision. And in this case, it was Preet Bharara. So I'm assuming Bharara may be around here for a long time if he wants to be.
There is that issue of the appeals.
Well, that's right. The Supreme Court of the United States said the theft of honest services law relied on a specific quid pro quo. That's how Joe Bruno was first convicted. He appealed based on the Supreme Court, and in the end, he had another trial, and he was exonerated. Now, if that's the case, you better believe that Shelley Silver is said to be very sanguine about the fact that his appeals will bear fruit. I'm sure the same thing is true with the former Senate leader, Dean Skelos, and they expect that they did not meet the criteria set by the Supreme Court. Bharara, who's a genius, said, okay, we're going to show this as a pattern without having gotten anybody on a telephone to say, okay, I accept this bribe, but show a pattern of behavior. We'll see whether the courts accept that.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chertok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. All eyes turned recently to Paris and the UN Climate Change Conference, where an agreement was reached with almost 200 nations. Meanwhile, closer to home, in Albany, Mayor Kathy Sheehan announced that the city has joined the Global Compact of Mayors Coalition. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
Mayors from cities all over the globe have banded together, pledging to reduce greenhouse gas emissions while making their municipalities more resilient to climate change and report their progress publicly. Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan believes it's up to the world's cities to lead the fight against global warming.
I think that mayors are uniquely positioned to be a strong voice on climate change because, you know, we're dealing with the impacts of climate change in our cities. If you look at the challenges that we have with more intense rain, for example, that we've been seeing here in the city of Albany, it really impacts our ability to deal with floods, to deal with the types of emergencies that arise with severe weather changes. And so we think that it's really important that our voices are heard.
The Compact of Mayors was conceived by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, the UN Special Envoy for Cities and Climate Change. The two spoke Wednesday on the group's YouTube channel.
Saving our planet, lifting people out of poverty, advancing economic growth. These are one and the same fight.
Back in September of 2014, Bloomberg Philanthropies launched the Compact of Mayors with the United Nations. I have a saying, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And that's one of the things that the compact does.
Mayor Sheehan says joining the compact reinforces Albany's commitment to climate action by also taking stock of greenhouse emissions and the current effects of climate change in Albany.
There is work that we are doing, but this is a global problem, and we need world leaders to step up and recognize that there needs to be leadership at that global level if we're going to have an impact.
Mark Dunlay, co-chair of the 100% Renewable Now New York campaign, applauds Sheehan's decision.
We need action at all levels of government, particularly starting at the local level. We hope that the city of Albany will commit to going to 100% clean energy for all its energy uses as soon as possible. That could also include the promotion of community choice aggregation to allow residents and local businesses to collectively purchase energy together, both to lower costs but to reduce its carbon footprint.
For her part, Mayor Sheehan hopes that the decision by Albany and 400 other local and international cities to join the compact, including Rochester and New York City, will convince other cities to join, creating an urban groundswell that will lead the movement to combat climate change.
We are a climate smart city. We have recently hired an energy manager through funds that were provided to us by the New York State Power Authority. We're committed not only to making the city operations greener, but the focus is on making the entire city greener and understanding how we can make changes to our building codes, for example, that will provide for green infrastructure.
Bloomberg says when cities cut their emissions, they help their residents live longer, healthier lives. When they improve the energy efficiency of their buildings, they save their taxpayers money. When they invest in modern, low-carbon infrastructure, they raise their residents' standard of living. Dunlay says Sheehan is positioning Albany to benefit the future of its residents.
We look forward to seeing the City of Albany's changes to its building codes to promote net zero carbon emissions in its new buildings, and also a program to energy retrofit existing buildings. Certainly also look forward to increased funding and expansion of their mass transit program, starting with the city buses.
Joining the Compact of Mayors complements the Albany 2030 plan, a highly touted framework for Albany's future that emphasizes transportation enhancements and bicycle-friendly streets to further reduce emissions and turn the city greener. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Economic development funding was announced for the 10 regional economic development councils across New York last week. Along with the $750 million in regular funding, three regions each received $500 million. As the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports, the northern part of New York missed out on the top awards, and officials there hope it doesn't compromise a key initiative for the region.
This was the fifth year the state distributed grants to the regional economic development councils. The North Country region has received more than $338 million since the governor began the competitive economic development councils in 2011. But at the ceremony Thursday in Albany, it failed to win the $500 million in Upstate Revitalization Initiative, or URI, funds, and was awarded $85.1 million. 115th Assembly District Representative Janet Dupree is pragmatic about not receiving the larger award.
Nobody wins it all the time, and we have to remember that if it wasn't for the governor starting this program and allowing our local regions to select their own priorities to pick out what projects they want state funding to go to, we wouldn't be in the great position we're in and have been in for now 5 years. So we certainly don't want to lose sight of that.
Plattsburgh Mayor James Calnon says while folks are somewhat disappointed, $85 million is a substantial investment.
Look at $85.1 million. How can anybody be sad about that? The governor indicated in his speech that in addition to that, he's going to ask the legislature to award our region and the other two that didn't get one of the top awards an additional $50 million in next year's budget. That brings us to, you know, $135 million. How could we be too sad about that? My biggest concern is Laurentian remains a little uncertain.
Laurentian is an aerospace developer that announced with much fanfare in 2006 plans to site in Plattsburgh a state-of-the-art maintenance facility for wide-body aircraft that could bring 1,000 jobs to the area. But the stuttering economy prevented plans from moving forward. The North Country's bid for the $500 million award included a $50 million investment to move the $241 million project forward. Plattsburgh North Country Chamber of Commerce President and CEO and co-chair of the North Country Regional Economic Development Council, Gary Douglas, says the project may now hinge on the additional $50 million the governor promised to the regions that did not receive the URI money.
That was the first project that the governor's office discussed with us after the announcements, and they made very clear that that certainly is at the top of the list for the North Country in terms of what they would envision the supplemental funding to be in the budget to cover. Note that the $130 million, when you put that $50 million together with the $85, it actually is more than the $126 million in total URI funding we were requesting for year one.
Former Congressman Bill Owens is a member of the Regional Economic Development Council's Subcommittee on Agriculture and Clean Energy.
I think all of us were disappointed. However, somewhat like when the base closed, you can't dwell on that disappointment. You have to move on to the next step, try and figure out what other opportunities are out there, and how we can solve this problem of funding for Laurentian.
The North Country is the largest geographically among the 10 regional economic development councils.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York ranks 49th in the nation for tissue and organ donations. As the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports, Saratoga County is taking steps to boost the state's ranking.
Outside the Saratoga County Department of Motor Vehicles office at the Wilton Mall, officials gathered to discuss a new campaign to get more New Yorkers to register to be an organ, eye, and tissue donor. As part of the campaign, new literature and electronic messages will be displayed to encourage people to donate. County Clerk Craig Hayner.
Right now, every 8 years, you renew your license, and so that would be a time that it would be naturally prompted through the process as someone does their transaction. So we have these cards here now. We'll also be promoting it on our television screens that are and we'll be promoting that year-round.
The New York State Association of Counties is also working with the New York State Alliance for Donation on the Working Together, Working for Life campaign. NYSAC Executive Director Stephen Aquario says a new law has already helped boost the number of registered organ and tissue donors at the DMV.
So the question was asked, would you like to be an organ donor? The licensee could choose to just not answer it, leave it blank. Those forms were processed. That law was changed just recently, requiring a yes, no, or not at this time.
Aisha Tater, executive director of the New York State Alliance for Donation, says New York ranks 49th in the country, in part due to the relatively difficult process of signing up donors. Drivers are only required to renew their license every 8 years in New York, and those seeking a driver's license under 18 are not asked to be a donor. She said New York also does not have an easy way to become a donor online.
We do not have a dedicated website to enroll in the registry. You can go through the MyDMV website or you can go through the New York State Department of Health. Both of those processes are extremely long.
Deb Guerra's late husband was an organ and tissue donor. Guerra said while it may be difficult for some to choose to sign up, those on the other side of the coin will receive the ultimate gift.
And if you're one of those people that's waiting for, you know, an organ, it's giving them the most selfless gift, the gift of life.
Saratoga County ranks second in the state for organ and tissue donation. This week, the county passed the resolution to support organ donation. Saratoga Board of Supervisors Chair Matthew Veach.
It doesn't matter where you rank. We are not doing well as a state in regards to organ donation and tissue donation. So even though we're number two, we want to be number one and pass number one because we want to be the best in the state. We want to get those numbers up for New York State nationwide on organ donation.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1551. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at the same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.